Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And you are welcome along to the latest episode of the Huddle Breakdown. James here on hosting duties once again with my friend Alan Morrison from Celtic by Numbers. We're here to conduct an autopsy on the Celtic 1, Lazio 2 enjoyment that we all had yesterday in the second game of the Champions League group. So how are you getting on, Alan? Did you enjoy that footballing viewing experience yesterday?
Well, as much as I could. I mean, you know, I don't know. You probably got far superior coverage without paying a fortune over where you are over here. If you're not prepared to spend a fortune on BT Sport, as it was, then you know, you're scrabbling about for streams, which were incredibly unreliable. In fact, missed most of the first half, actually.
Oh my!
So just kind of started watching it back today. So yeah. That added to the frustration level. To be fair,
for Champions League here, the main service is called Paramount Plus, and it's a streaming service. It's pretty reliable, I forget what I pay, maybe $8 a month for, but that's everything. Like, it's the whole Paramount catalog of their movies, and I think Serie A is on there, and maybe the Bundesliga now too. I forget, but. I can't keep track. They all hop around between ESPN Plus and Paramount Plus and this, that, and the other thing. So we usually get one broadcaster that does the game. So we don't get like the UK BT or Sky broadcast teams, unfortunately. I'd prefer those usually, but we just get some dude in some room somewhere in North America watching the game and doing it over the TV. But one to two scoreline, and XG battle was actually ultimately we won the XG battle, Alan. I mean, for moral victories, we can put that up on the list of moral victories, is we won an XG game.
Yeah, listen, this is a classic game where, you know, you're watching it as a fan. You've played well as your team. You watch your team play well. You look like you've scored a winning goal. Then that gets taken away, and that's a blow. And then you can see the goal, you know, 6 minutes into injury time. It's an absolute hammer blow. And so in terms of how did the game make you feel, it makes you feel really bad. And, you know, you focus on the result and you get reminded that, although, you know, it's now more than 10 years by the time we play again at home, more than 10 years since we won a Champions League game at home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the result makes you feel terrible. The way it happened makes you feel terrible. And that's kind of, then that frames that whole narrative of what you think about the game. But for me, you know, in the cold light of day, looking at the performance, which is what we do, you know, I think it's a very different narrative, really, frankly, for me. And this is a classic case of performance versus outcome. The outcome was shitty, and the way it happened was awful. But the performance actually was what we need to concentrate on, because and why, you know, because the performance is more indicative of what may happen in future than the result is. So, you know, and you know, because it's likely to be broadly kind of repeatable. And then what are the patterns? What is Celtic's Champions League campaign showing us? It's only two games versus, for example, last season. What can we learn from that? So for me, you know, there was a huge amount to be encouraged by. Clearly, obviously, a huge amount to be that we can improve on, obviously. But, you know, what I guess what I'm saying is I'm trying not to let the manner of the game and the outcome of the game cloud, you know, a dispassionate assessment of what actually happened.
Yeah, that's easy to do, obviously, and that's partly why we have a podcast, is to try and trying to focus on some of these more objective and I stress the term attempt, more objective and analytically grounded perspective. And I agree. I mean, it was demoralizing in so many ways because of all of the historical baggage. But there's a lot, I think, of potential positives, but I think it reinforces a lot of the disappointments as well, which is, you know, that issue of the raw material, the talent levels in the team. And I think that was on glaring display once again yesterday, unfortunately. And part of what we talked about when we found out about the Champions League group was that this was about as ideal of a group as we could get, most likely. Part of that was because of Lazio not being that good this season, probably. And I think they really delivered on that. They were pretty blasé, I guess is the way I would characterize it. They didn't really have much that made me be in awe, or, you know, none of their individual players. I was like, wow, I wish we had that guy on our team. You know what I mean? Like, there's guys on Feyenoord, you'd be like, whoa, that would be really cool if we had someone like that. Yeah, I just, Lazio to me just looks like a really mediocre side. And so that's, you know, that doesn't diminish from, I agree with you, the performance that we put up, but I think they were set up in a way and play in a way and have a talent level and a profile that assisted us in having a better performance. Generally then, what are your thoughts as far as, let's go over some of the positives then. Cause I think we understandably get a reputation of maybe being negative, because we do try to counterbalance things. But I, you know, to your point, I think there was a lot of positives. So maybe talk about what you walked away from and giving you some encouragement, not only for the rest of the Champions League, but maybe under the full duration of Brendan Rodgers' tenure, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as I've touched on, you know, in the run of games that Celtic have had recently, you know, away at Ibrox, Rotterdam, Livingston, Motherwell, it's been a tough run. And with, you know, depleted resources in relative terms. And actually, I would say that if you looked at all of those matches, you know, the sort of man of the match has been the manager, really, in terms of managing through the various scenarios that have unfolded in those games. And in terms of what is the positive for me is, I think just it's more a general point about how Rodgers is setting up to play in these matches. We've only got two matches of data. Obviously, it's a tiny sample. And also the distorting effect of playing with nine players for nearly 30 minutes, wherever it was, in Rotterdam is enormous. But even having said all that, what seems to have happened, or seems to be happening, and we'll see how it plays out against Atletico Madrid, is that Rodgers has pretty much flipped around Celtic's kind of performances from a defending and an attacking perspective on what happened last season under Postecoglou. So if you recall, last season to Postecoglou, if you benchmark Celtic against the rest of the teams in the Champions League group stages, you know, Celtic were doing pretty well in terms of attacking output. I think probably touching into the top 10 on things like total XG, quality of chances, number of shots, a whole range of metrics. And as we know, chances weren't taken and points were dropped. But the problem last season was that we were giving up nearly 2xG every single game. We conceded 16 goals and we were just as wide open as the ocean in terms of defensively. And we were ranking near the bottom, actually, defensively, benchmarked against all the other Champions League teams. Well, not all of them. Clearly, there was one that was just phenomenally bad. but pretty close to the bottom on most of the other metrics defensively. This season, well, I don't have any good news from an attacking perspective because we're ranking near the bottom now of all the attacking metrics. But again, context, 2 games, 1 played with 9 players. There's a penalty to factor in there as well, which distorts things in a 2-match sample. Again, sort of thing from a defensive perspective, but from an attacking perspective. So, you know, we're not creating a lot in terms of an attacking sense, but defensively, we've suddenly turned into, you know, arguably Champions League, which is remarkable. If you take away the penalty, so non-penalty XG, it's kind of under one. The number of shots that we're giving up is decreased. The thing that's decreased the most is the quality of the shots being taken by the opposition. Last season, it was like 0.13 for every shot. It's almost halved in terms of that. We've massively reduced the number of chances we're giving away in transition and through counter pressing. I think so. What does that all mean? It's really, I think what Rodgers has tweaked is he's actually just basically made us more solid, but also I'm probably these aren't massive changes. We're not suddenly gone to a back six. We've not suddenly collapsed back to the edge of our own box. These are subtle changes that have had big impacts. So we're actually not playing any deeper than we were, which I surprised me because I thought with Scales and Phillips, especially, you know, two quite not quick defenders, we would be a little bit deeper. But actually, the midfield are playing slightly more forward, but it's actually the forward line that isn't as high as it was. We're not committing players like, you know, Jota and Abada last season, Maeda, Kyogo. They tended to stay very, very high. And this season, they're not. We're actually falling back into a 4-4-2 or a 4-5-1 as quickly as we lose the ball. That sort of recovery speed, the recovery efforts of the players to get back into shape has been tremendous and a real noticeable feature of the first 2 games. And basically means that we're not easy to play through and we're not getting caught on that. Even though, you know, yesterday, I think Liam Scales gave the ball away on the edge of his own box about 3 or 4 times. It didn't amount to anything because the midfield got back quickly. Yang was actually pretty good at recovering and getting back into shape. I'll say that for him. So we're a little bit more compact. We're not committing as many men forward, but we're not playing any deeper. He's maintained a good high line, and just that effort to focus on recovery has meant we're just not getting caught out in transition as much, which is a lot of the trouble. If you think back to the Leipzig games and Madrid games, getting caught on the break time and time and time again. And when you get caught on the break, two things: one is you're attacking against a disorganized defense, which means there tends to be more spaces available, and therefore the other factor of that is that you're forcing defenders to make decisions about which runner do they pick up, do they go to the ball, do they jockey, do they commit to the challenge. All of those things, you force them into making decisions. So if you can reduce those things, then you're really relying on the opposition to pick their way through, you know, banks of four, etc., which is, you know, against any set of athletes who are reasonably well organized, is a really tricky thing to do. So that's why, really, from a performance perspective, that all makes sense to me, because, you know, I think Postecoglou's ideal was, well, we'll just go out and we'll make them defend and we'll make them uncomfortable, and if we score some goals, then, you know, we've played great football, everyone wants to see it, and we'll win being true to ourselves, and that's all great. But, you know, as we've seen time and time again in the Champions League at that level, the more open the game, the more XG good teams are allowed to rack up, the quicker they're going to get to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, We've seen it. You've seen it in the Champions League group stages, some of the scores that get racked up. That's what happens to you. That's what happened in the Bernabeu. It could have happened in Leipzig, etc. So the closer and tighter you keep the game, it's a low-scoring sport, the more, you know, the chance you've got of nicking a goal, and the less goals in the game, the more the underdog's got a chance. It's just common sense. It's a far more sensible way to play for Celtic in that competition. And so the other aspect, as well as that, the compactness, the recovery runs being very good, the third element is just simply controlling the ball. And this is the thing that was impressive about last night. Lazio may be 16th in Serie A, but they're still third for possession and ball control. They are at the end of the day, a Maurizio Sarri team. Sarri controls the ball. Yes, he wants his team to be aggressive and vertical where possible, but ultimately he wants his team to control the ball. And you know, Celtic went toe-to-toe and, in fact, you know, had better control of the game. If you look across the 90 minutes, Celtic had better control of the ball over that whole game. Again, in some ways, it's a defensive move. If you've got the ball, the opposition can't score. So we're not being as direct. We're not being as many sort of, you know, Hail Marys through the middle as perhaps we were under Postecoglou. We're keeping the ball. Therefore, we're not conceding territory because of that. We're not conceding chances because of that. I thought we played out from the back reasonably well. I mentioned Scales. I mean, it's just got to price that in. It's, you know, that's where we are in terms of personnel at the moment. But in general, I thought we played pretty well out from the back. So positives for me are we're playing the style of football that a team like Celtic needs to play to have a fighting chance of getting a point, nicking a 1-0 in this type of competition. And to lose the way we did was gutting. Everybody will focus on that. It was completely undeserved as regards the flow of the game. And if we keep playing like that, we will nick games, we will nick goals, we will nick results over time, because we've got a good level of control and we've got a good, solid defensive foundation.
I largely agree. I mean, to me, that is the overwhelming positive, is the potential that we have a formula that makes sense relative to competing in Europe at this level, and having that proof of concept kind of proved out with this personnel, I think, is really positive. If there was a kind of strategic commitment to having, you know, this level of manager and this style of play, and that became like, this is what we're going to do. You know, this is Celtic. And for the next 5-10 seasons, this is how we're going about this. And even when and if Rodgers leaves, like, this is how we're doing it. Because it, you know, part of the challenge of making progress is identifying where the deficiencies are, where are the problems, and then addressing them. And I think that's the good news, is I think it's pretty clear now what the problems are. And they're not on the touchline. And you know, the formula of setting up and how we're going to go about doing this, you know, seems to be pretty clear, pretty smart and effective. Now it's just getting better players. I mean, it really is. I mean, and that's not to make light of how hard that can be. But we've talked about this endlessly, and I've mentioned this in the past, that this, you know, Rodgers got I argued for a long time now, a very unfair characterization of his first tenure in Europe, because of some of the lopsided score lines that were on, you know, chance concession that was well below what our side last season did. And you just, you know, you run into these hornet's nests of Neymar and Messi and Cavani and Mbappe type players that, you know, they score on 4 of 4 chances in a game. Whereas, you know, and that's yesterday. I mean, if you break down these games, and when you get to these nip and tuck type matches against teams of, and again, I'm not, I'm not that impressed with Lazio, but they're still of a level. They had two decent chances in the game and scored on both of them. And when I say chance, I mean actual shots, something that got to a shot. They squandered some other ones, like some of those other, you know, like what one of the turnover central that they've sprayed wide. It was almost a, not exactly, because positionally we were a little different, but was very analogous to the one that they scored on late at the end. Spread it wide. I think it was Anderson, and he just completely flubbed it. I mean, just didn't even get a shot off and, you know, screwed up. So again, that's the difference where if we're playing Feyenoord or probably in the coming games against Atletico, that they're not going to be that bad on those kind of transitions. But that, you know, and really we had, I would argue, two good chances. If you just look at XG, one was the one that Kyogo scored on, which, you know, probably wasn't a great finish, went right between the keeper's legs. So, yeah, and the data reflect that, meaning that, you know, their keeper got dinged for that one. And what would have been just a genius finish with Kyogo's kind of flailing outside of his right foot, I think it was, even with that great pass from McGregor, that you know, it would have been tough. I mean, their keeper would move to where he needed to be, and I mean, it would have had to have been a world class finish to get it past him from those circumstances. But that was pretty much it for both teams. I mean, there just wasn't a whole lot in it, and you know, this is where we come back to the discussions that we had when Rodgers was rumored and then announced as the manager. It was like, okay, well, let's get the keeper position nailed down, because these fine margins, you need the keeper to make those kind of saves on those relatively small number of situations. And, you know, that hasn't happened. And we don't have that kind of creative impulse to maybe go from two of those chances a game to four, or, you know, just on those fine margins of tipping it a little bit. So yeah, I think they're, you know, identifying where the actual issues are, I think is a huge positive. Doesn't mean they're going to get addressed. But hopefully there's enough body of work now, in existence, that as we go forward to January and next summer, that, you know, there's enough focus put on how do we go about it actually addressing some of these issues. So, on the personnel, on the recruitment side. So let's get into some of the not so positive aspects then. Cause there were certainly some of those as well. So what, if you lined up on the pros and cons in the T chart, what would fall in your cons column?
Well, again, you know, you defend well as a team, you have a good shape, you work hard to shuttle back when you lose the ball, and you do all that consistently, you control the ball, and yet you still concede two goals. And this may be a bit harsh, but I'm calling that Hart should save that header from the corner. Again, a younger, more agile goalkeeper gets there quicker and keeps that ball out. It barely crossed the line. And if let's look at it. Two games, right? The goal in 46 minutes in Rotterdam. That's down to Hart. That's a younger goalkeeper gets across, two hands on it. It's from 35 yards out. He saves that, and then the equaliser. Sets it going at halftime, one up. You know, that forces their hand. They have to probably make changes, etc. Changes the game dynamic completely. So, you know, sick of talking about this again. And again, people need to realize that there's a huge difference between what is acceptable and workable with, and you can price in Scotland versus this level. And when we talk about, so I think we're both on the same page, when we talk about what does Celtic need, where do they need to improve, we're talking about it looking at the benchmark of what we need to do in Europe. Forget about the Scottish Premier League. And the goalkeeping position, you know, Joe Hart, many, many attributes, even now, still. But that's two games that Celtic have had control of and then lost control because of two shots that I think both of them should be saved. That's the difference at Champions League level. You can't absorb that at that level. You can absorb it in Scotland. You can't absorb it at this level. So you know, I posited at the beginning, you know, last show on Tuesday and in Twitter, you know, people think Bain should play, and again, some people scoff at that because they think Joe Hart, England goalkeeper, ex dozens of caps, Man City, champions, you know, Premier League winner, blah 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 blah. But I'm talking about the here and now. We're talking about a 36-year-old goalkeeper versus one who's 30. And I know it's Scott Bain, and I know he threw one into the net against Hibs, and I know he made a howler in when he came on as a sub against Livingston and dropped the ball in front of the goal. But in terms of agility, in terms of speed across the box, speed in the area, again, I'll accept that risk of that versus just getting across the goal quicker, just being more agile, just being faster on his feet. I don't really care whether it was Sigrist or Bain. Frankly, I just don't think we can carry the risk of a declining goalkeeper like Hart in Champions League level. And I'm not being a smart ass, but I think two goals in two games that we're controlling is evidence of that. So that's the biggest, you know, negative for me. And then the other
can I mention something just real quick? I'll throw in 2 cents on the Hart topic, because I think even on the last goal, the nature of his immobility, I'm not saying it should have been saved. It would have been a difficult save.
It was a superb header. Absolutely superb.
It was, but so we're talking about margins here, right? So had it been slightly less of a brilliant header, the fact that he has to scramble to get across, which again, he made the right play. Like he did the best he could in that circumstance. It was a good cross, but the fact that he is who he is at this stage and takes the time that he does to get across to cover that shot, he's not in the same positional stability in movement to be able to lunge back the other direction. So it went from something that maybe, you know, a better, more mobile keeper lunges and doesn't quite get to because it was a great shot. And if it had been a slightly less great shot, he gets saved, versus him just standing there like a potted plant and not even moving because he had to rush so much to get over to try and cover the back post. So I think that, again, I'm not blaming him for that goal. It's more so I think it also does highlight this issue relative to fine margins that, you know, even if Pedro doesn't have a great header, he probably scored. He just had to kind of get that on goal and not have it directly at where Hart ended up. And it's probably going in based off of how much how frantic Hart was trying to get back. So just wanted to throw that in.
No, that's fair. And it's such a dainty header, actually, that even a fingernail on it might have kept it out because it was such a soft, beautiful, beautifully cushioned header. It was perfect, really, but it wouldn't have needed a lot to keep it out either. So there's that. And then, you know, we've talked about it again. It's just we're so lacking in wide area penetration in terms of what that gives us. Now, I know, listen, you know, Maeda opened up the game. He did what we don't see very often and often enough, which is he took the ball and he cut inside aggressively, played the ball into O'Reilly. O'Reilly fed in.
Brilliant goal. It was a brilliant goal. Pass.
It was a brilliant move. I, as you say, hypercritical. The goalkeeper, to me, I don't know what he's doing because the cue just hits it straight at him. So, but anyway, it's a brilliant move. And we deserve a bit of luck, maybe, that went through his legs. But outside of that, you know, where was the threat from wide? I mean, you know, Yang had a couple of lovely touches, a couple of nice moments. He actually is tracking back, as I say, I thought was really good. But in terms of, you know, he would get the ball on occasions, he would shuffle, shimmy, and then just simply pass it out of play or pass it straight to their player. There was no quality there in that final third. That's a huge issue for us this season, because at the moment, with Hatate, you know, is it poor form or is it just Hatate trying to play as a more advanced midfielder? If you take the two wingers and our nominal number 10, we're getting virtually nothing from them in terms of creativity and goal threat. And if we didn't have O'Reilly and Kyogo at the moment, where would we score? I don't know where it'd come from, in all honesty. So that to me is the other, you know.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
In a game like last night, it almost didn't matter in the sense that, like you say, there was nothing in it. Neither team created much. If Celtic had won that game 1-0, I think that would have been a fair and just outcome. And we wouldn't have cared that we hadn't created that many sort of chances. And that's the nature of Champions League football. You actually need people that are going to do all the mucky stuff, all the dirty stuff consistently well. But you have to take your chance when it comes, type of thing. And it wasn't the case last night that we created loads of chances, didn't take them, and then cursed at the end. It was a game that should have been managed out, really. They're the two main negatives, I suppose, for me in that sense.
Yeah, and this. A pet peeve of mine has become, and I'm probably over focusing on it because it's a pet peeve, is I just wish we'd recruit somebody that's fast. Like, can we sign, you know what I mean? I mean, Yang's got a little bit of pace, but I mean, how do we keep signing wingers that are slow? I mean, I just don't, Palma is not going to cut it at that level with pace. I mean, it's just, he gets space, and then the opposition just close him down immediately because he can't progress fast enough. So he's left at that level. You're going to be, you know, and he's a skilled player. Like, he seems like, I think he's kind of a Jota light kind of player. You know what I mean? Like, he's got some of the elements of on the ball skill. I mean, I don't think he's anywhere near as good as Jota in that sense, but where he does have the strengths are tilted in that direction. Just similarly, the Jota without the pace, and you put those two things together. I mean, he's going to have to be in like he was with the goal. I mean, the ball kind of flopped to him, and he did a great job finishing it because he's a skilled footballer on the ball. But is he going to be the person that's going to create space? Is he going to create things for teammates? And I'm particularly at the European level or even above. I'm concerned about domestically against teams that have athletic fullbacks even. That, you know, he's going to be in that kind of Haksabanovic category, which is, you know, he might get the ball a lot and then just have to recycle it back because he can't beat anybody, or create that space or get to the byline and whip across in. I mean, it's just, so yeah. And Yang's kind of so deficient in his whirling dervish style, on the ball that, yeah, his decision-making and maybe his technical ability, once he does beat somebody, it's just, it's a bit of a mess, to be honest with you. I mean, it really is. I mean, relative to Hatate up there and his risk-reward issues, it's, I agree with you. I mean, it's like, I just don't know where the creativity is. And that's, maybe it's Tilio coming. We can keep hoping that he's going to be the great savior.
Listen, we always fall back on the players that aren't here. I mean, Tilly was a young kid, come from the Australian League. We got to be realistic about what.
Oh, great! So we come back to
what are the other alternatives? And actually, I think we've got three pretty good. Well, three players sitting on the bench who are central midfielders who are better than the wingers that we have. That's what I'm trying to say. So that says to me, we need to probably change the shape a little bit. I'm absolutely settled on that now. In the short, you know, in the short term, until Abada's back, until Yang, Palmer, Tilio are settled, integrated, happy, confident, built up their fitness, maybe strengthened up a little bit, got a bit stronger so they can mitigate any pace issues with at least being difficult to get off the ball, etc. All that's going to take time. Of course it does. It's natural. The young players. So until that time, you know, to me, you know, mitigate it by trying to get you at least your strongest 11 players out.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially in Europe. I think a striker tandem of Maeda and Kyogo would be interesting.
That's enough pace to stretch any defense, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think we've seen that already in the first two games that, you know, they haven't always come off, but there's been balls over the top and those balls in the channel that has really put opposition backlines under stress. And it creates stress for their keepers too. Do they come to the ball? Don't they not come from the ball? You know, I think it does make a lot of sense relative to the formula that we've settled on as far as more of a, I don't know, you tell me, more like a middle block rather than a high block, you know, with that compression of the back, the top, the front line. Because that's, I mean, again, if you have
it's not revolutionist. It's small tweaks that Rodgers has done that had a big impact. And it's more about priority, right? So previously last season, it might have been, okay, you lose the ball in the final third. I want you to press. Now it might be the priority is I want you to fall back into shape. Yep. Probably not so much high up the pitch. I don't mean that, but certainly certainly anywhere in the middle of the field. You lose the ball, I want you in shape now, and I want us to be compact, and I want us to be solid. And it's a small thing, and it's hard work actually. But it makes a big difference.
Well, I know it's in the data too, but if you just observationally, I mean, last season we had a lot of Maeda chasing people down, and trying that forward press. Going at the keeper, you know, going at center backs, full backs that are deep. And we're doing that to a degree, but again, it's a level of intensity. And a lot of times under Postecoglou, I felt like a lot of that was wasteful, meaning that it wasn't actually doing much other than kind of harassing teams that could just pass around us pretty easily. If you think about that, Maeda being maybe 15 yards off of the touch line or the end line, and then having to get back into shape and recovering. Whereas even if it's 10 or 15 yards less advanced that he is, getting back into shape, getting back to, you know, as my hockey friends would say, back checking, you know, to that forward line coming back and defending and kind of, you know, he's so brilliant at that. So the more you utilize him as that weapon in that regard, given our priorities and the formula that we're looking for, I think it's excellent. I mean, I think he's offering significantly more defensive value doing that, the back checking, than he was, you know, chasing down Real Madrid center backs as if they weren't going to just say, swat you away, get away from me, you fast fly, and kind of pass around you. So, yeah, I actually like a lot I think it would be interesting to see what you're discussing again, whether it's a 4-4-2 or 4-4-2 diamond or, you know, 3-4-2-1, 3-4-1-2. But there's a lot of different iterations that we, and again, I'm guessing that we will start to see more tinkering as we get more players back from injury. That's my guess anyway, given Rodgers' historical proclivities.
You can still have width. I mean, a 4-4-2 diamonds is brilliant in terms of. And again, listen, talking about this as if it's a shape for night, it's not. It's like an attacking starting framework. We'll still play the same in defense as we've done, whether that's a 4-4-2 or it's a 4-5-1, whatever you want to call it. That won't change. It's really about you know, connections and the 4-4-2 diamond still lets you have players giving width, it still lets you have a 10 behind a striker, etc. So you still have those things, but it really, it's all about finding space. But in this case, it's about getting the better players on the pitch, really. Yeah.
Well, I'll give some formal advice to, I don't know, but I'll call him Brendan in case he's watching or ends up watching this, which is, Brendan, don't call it a 4-2-2-2 or else you'll get the legacy wrath of John Barnes. History. So even if it's going to end up being a box midfield, just call it the diamond, so that we don't have to deal with all of the baggage from the history. Because I more of the box version of the midfield wouldn't, and it would be fluid, obviously. But I see a lot of reason to think that that could be an interesting path to pursue as we head into the double tango with Atletico now. Let's talk about some of the individual performances then. I mean, we kind of touched upon some of them. As far as positive standouts, who would you put in your more positive than negative as far as their total package?
Yeah, I think in midfield, you know, again, McGregor obviously wasn't going to get man marked, so he was free to sort of do McGregor type things, which I think he recycled the ball, kept things moving, kept things ticking over pretty well. O'Reilly, obviously, he had a few moments where he was caught in possession, but again, it's just a variety of work that he does. The assist, obviously, the amount of defensive work he gets through, as I say, he was second again to Maeda in terms of pressures. So Maeda had 35, which is pretty mad. O'Reilly had 25, was the next highest. Kyogo 21 was the one after that. So, you know, you're getting everything, I think, with O'Reilly. As we've seen this season, he's been doing the job of three sort of specialist midfielders, really. So, I think, I know, Scales, what can you say? I mean, it's pretty much the same every game. I think you've got to admire the guy, right? Because he keeps going, he keeps plugging away, he keeps doing the best he can and doing a good job most of the time. The rest of the time, you get turnovers, you get, you know, rushing to the ball when he perhaps shouldn't, etc., like the goal against Motherwell and so forth. So, but I think, overall, he did a decent job. You know, Kyogo, you know, again, he's got nobody around him that's helping him. This is the problem. You know, if he's not getting a pass from O'Reilly, he's not getting a pass at the moment. It's as simple as that. So, you know, he took his goal, but that's more of a systemic issue. I thought Phillips was okay. I don't understand, unless Phillips was really struggling physically, which he may have been, I don't know. I don't know why we brought Carter Vickers on, and I'm probably being biased with hindsight here, obviously, as to what happened for the winning goal, where Carter Vickers coughed it up right in the middle of the goal with a transition of 5v3, and that absolute nightmare. But you know, why was he even needed to be on the pitch, sort of thing? That may be recency bias.
It's a tough spot for someone to kind of be reintroducing themselves after effectively 6 months out. I mean, he had a cup of tea coming back before he hurt the hamstring. So, yeah, interesting. Again, I'm not critical about it. It's just I find it interesting that was. My guess
I thought
it was
is a strange
because,
thing, yeah.
My guess is because of Phillips having had the issues with his own injury issue and kind of building up. That's my guess. But one thing I did want to say real quick on Liam Scales is that this is a completely selfish, to say it's selfish, is that I'm glad he didn't score the bicycle kick, because had he scored the bicycle kick, we would have had to have ended this show. We'd had to stop, because Endo would have become so unbearable and more ridiculous than he already is that we just had to stop everything. So thank you, Liam Scales, for not ending the huddle breakdown, because it was within your power to do so. I think Greg Taylor actually was pretty good. Like, he overall, given He gave the ball away a couple of times, and again, just based off of his, we talk about endlessly, lost some 1v1 physical battles. But within that context, I actually thought he inverted very well. He was playing that kind of midfield role. Overall, I thought pretty well. So he stands out to me as kind of a more positive than negative. I'd say probably I wouldn't say it's a red flag yet, but a growing anxiety I have might be on Alistair Johnston, and maybe his suitability with the way he's being asked to play under Rodgers. He's such a good defender in many ways, but he doesn't have that blistering pace. And on the ball, I'm still unconvinced. Like he shows flashes, and but at times I worry about kind of that technical proficiency and decision making. So that's more of a eating away at me kind of thing. I'm not concerned, so to speak, but to keep monitoring. I thought Scales. I mean, it's one of those things where until he goes too far in the things that he's doing well, like he's been walking that edge at times, being so aggressive in the tackle and so physically on the front foot that it hasn't turned into a calamity yet. But I suspect it's a matter of when, not if, that he's just that.
Well, yeah. The number of times he's given the ball away close to the edge of his own box, and he's got away with it nearly every time. Lagrabielka wasn't so lucky and got a lot of flack. So it's outcome influencing perception rather than reality in terms of what actually happened. So yeah.
So listen, now on the ball, but even his defending so far has shaded towards really good, actually. On like one-on-one defending, like positionally there have been some issues, but I think I've seen there's slight margin of that. If he's just a half a step, not quite there, it could turn into a calamity, but as long as he keeps doing what he's doing at this level with how he's been playing, I think it's about as good as we could have hoped for. I think, I mean, it's been going, as well as we could have hoped. So that's a good thing.
If you look back at the games that he's had to stand up to, it's pretty impressive, really, overall. But yeah. Listen, I wanted to ask you a question because I don't know the answer to this, and I'm hoping you do, right? This is the one thing tactically that I don't think it mattered in a material outcome sense, but it just scared the hell out of me when I saw that we were lining up Yang, Hitati, Taylor, Scales on the same side of the pitch. And we moved Maeda over to the right. So we had our best forward presser, our most solid fullback, and our best midfield defender, O'Reilly, on one side. And we had the four players who were most likely to give the ball away all on one side of the pitch. And I didn't understand that at all. But maybe you can help me there.
The only thing I can come up with is maybe they identify, and I don't know, like I haven't looked at Lazio this closely, but maybe I could see thinking that if their left center back and left fullback were identified as weak points that you'd want to press more, and or maybe they're sloppier on the ball, that kind of thing. I could see that logic more as like a proactive try to force them into mistakes kind of logic. But generally, I mean, as far as your patented toxic combinations go, that left side's not even a hat trick. That's the quadrenal potential toxic combination, an unprecedented four. So so that's if I'm trying to think about what maybe could the logic could be. I don't know, because it was. I mean, it was.
I looked at where the Lazio control the game, and if anything, it's on the right hand side of their attack. They have more control with Felipe Anderson on the right normally. I mean, Zaccagni on the left looks a really good young player. He was fast, aggressive, but he didn't really get involved in the game a lot. and he's wanting to cut inside all the time. And, you know, they really didn't look like, when I looked at the data, they didn't look like they had a lot of control on the left-hand side, which is why I didn't know why we were packing that. Maybe it was the reverse. Maybe it was, they thought that was, like you say, that was the weak side and we could overload. But I didn't detect we were particularly attacking, you know, down that side, albeit the goal did come down that right side, to be fair.
Well, and this goes back to, you know, perception versus reality and how our perception might be different. So who knows what reality actually is. But if you kind of just take reputation of McGregor, Taylor, and Hitate as kind of your foundational build-up and, you know, keeping possession and creating and then having Yang as the outlet to take somebody on 1v1 with that side, like, I disagree with it, but I could see that maybe being a theory, as opposed to Maeda on that side, where he just, you know, he really, despite, you know, creating the goal, basically, there was a lot of instances of similar opportunities that he did not manifest in such great outcome. So I could see that as a, you know, a theory. Like I said, even though it's probably not one I would come up with, relative to, you know, having Maeda on that side. And this really comes down to the question of Hitate as a fulcrum. You know, is he really the person that you want to be building that kind of strategy around? And, you know, I think we've generally made our point of view clear on that. But if that continues to be the thought or the thinking, then I could see that being why that mixture of players would be on that side. And in fairness, like I sense a shift in wins on Hitate to a degree, where people are starting to get a little more critical. And, you know, even within the stadium, you kind of hear some of the groans on the broadcast as far as when he wasn't, successful in some of his creative attempts. I actually don't think he was that bad yesterday. I mean, that, you know, as far as his game play goes, like, he didn't have any of his really bad turnovers or giveaways that were, you know, directly responsible for a Lazio chance. So yeah, he wasn't successful in, you know, anything really of substance going forward, but, you know, that's kind of normal for him. And like I said, the fact that he didn't really have any major giveaways, I thought was fine. So I thought he was fine yesterday. I mean, I wouldn't point him out as a major problem yesterday as far as why the game turned out the way it did anyway.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, we're up around 50 minutes. Any other thoughts or summary on the game? And then if not, maybe we'll quick look ahead to our friend, is it Derek McInnes we see again this weekend as our old friend?
Oh, yes. He's only won two games this season. I think he won some games in the group stages of the League Cup, but
League
against Premier League teams. They won the opening game of the season, obviously, and then they beat us in the Cup, and they've either drawn or lost every other game against the Premier League side. It's interesting. I don't know whether that bubble's burst a little bit. Home on grass, we should be doing the business. But again, there's a lot of risk there because of, you know, again, it's almost remarkable that Celtic had that level of control in the match, given the problems that we've got, especially in attack at the moment. You know, we talked about the defense all season, but it's actually the attack that's worrying me more now. That if Carter Vickers is back, we just should start to look even more solid there. And we are giving away way too much XG in even the league games, let's be honest about it. But it's the attack, really. And listen, we had a good laugh about our friend Mickey, but it's almost the case that it doesn't matter. I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter, with a few exceptions maybe. But almost anyone that walks in the door to be manager down there is going to make them better. right? And, right. And you know, we've got to be ready for that challenge. So, as I say, there's a lot of work to do, I still think. And well, I think Rodgers is doing his best with the tools he's been given.
Well, and this is the paradox that we've entered into, which is the Ange Ball experience effectively collapsed chance creation domestically while being a complete free-for-all in Europe. And now we've entered the bizarro world, or the exact opposite of that, where we're shutting opponents down, relatively speaking, in two games in Europe under Rodgers, and at the same time conceding chances domestically, which is, as I mentioned earlier in the week, like pretty much in line with some of the worst stretches of our play in the last 5-6 seasons. So it'll be interesting. We know what we'll get from Komarnik for the most part. If I look at where I'd be most worried, and I don't know if this is truly reflective of the player, I haven't looked into him longer term, but and I don't even know his name off the top of my head. I didn't even, as I often say, I don't do that much work on our domestic opposition outside of Rangers a lot of the time anymore. Just don't have the time for it. But their keeper has been doing well this season in the 7 games. Including shot stopping. So in theory, if he's actually a good shot stopping keeper, then, you know, that's always something I worry about. And, you know, one of these opposition keepers having a big game and stealing a draw or something. And they have, what's his face? Armstrong down the wing. He's always a big fan of the butt.
He's incredibly productive for them. You know, if you look at the rest of the SPFL teams, Armstrong's a real standout. And actually, I want to mention the performance of Blair Spittle from Motherwell last week. It was actually one of the best performances by an opposition player against Celtic in the SPFL that I can remember. And I didn't have time actually, but I would have done an article on it. But his stats were tremendous in that game. His packing stats were absolutely exceptional, and obviously scored the goal. But he created the most chances. He had the best packing stats for them. He was excellent. And I think he's 28 now, Spittle, and he's another player that doesn't really have any pace, but he's a clever player. But him and Armstrong, I would argue, are two of the cleverest, most creative players outside of the top two, certainly, that are worth keeping an eye on. They're interesting players.
I somebody from Motherwell just got called up to Canada. I don't know if it was him.
There's a Theo Bear as a striker. He's Canadian.
Somebody else. Okay. I don't know Spittle's background, so I didn't know if that was, but yeah, because he was great.
He was at Partick Thistle for years, and then he went to Motherwell. But he looks he could be a star for Aberdeen or Hibs or something. He could easily be like one of their best players, I think.
Well, and these are things I have to mention or else Enda's going to kill me. So Liam Scales did get a call up to the Republic of Ireland. So congratulations to Enda and to
Absolutely.
Liam.
Absolutely, brilliant.
And he asked me to read this quote on the show. And this goes with, I think, the consensus of the support coming out of yesterday. It's not often that, I have to say, it's not often that Celtic surprised me, but even I was surprised at how Celtic managed to out-Celtic themselves once again in Europe. So that was Enda's requested statement in his absence today. So I think we'll leave it there for today's show. Once again, as always, if you can support by subscribing on YouTube, commenting below, we always welcome the comments and try to read through them. And if you can subscribe and or comment, leave a review on iTunes and or Spotify, we appreciate that. Always appreciate you listening and viewing, and we will talk to you next week.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.